This is Ladies with Gumption, episode 67, Trust Issues. I am entering today. My name is Jessica, and I am here with...
May.
And Tatiana.
And we are the Ladies with Gumption. We recap DC TV in a flash. If you would like to contact us, you can reach us on Twitter at DC TV Gumption. You can send us an email, ladieswgumption@gmail.com, or you can send us asks on Tumblr, ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. If you want to listen to all of our episodes, you can do so on the Ladies of Gumption Podomatic website, on iTunes, where you can leave us a nice review, Google Play, and we are consistently uploading to Facebook now. So if Facebook is your social media platform of choice, you can find us over there. 2019 goals, Facebook. I don't know if I've just been missing news or we just haven't been putting it in the doc for this week and I forgot, but I think the only news that I've heard about out this week is that Batwoman starts filming the pilot in Vancouver, curiously, instead of Chicago. So I don't know if it's going to be like a mix of Chicago and Vancouver, but they are definitely filming the pilot in March in Vancouver because it's all the better to cross over with, my dear.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, why not just look more of the same? But you're right, they'll get the crossover, which is what everyone wants.
Everyone.
And I'm sure it's also, like, cheaper for them to do it in Vancouver versus Chicago.
Yeah, probably. Also, the CW has released the first look of Nicole Maines as Dreamer in full costume, and she looks awesome. What do you guys think of Dreamer's costume?
I love it. I live for it.
I like it a lot, too. I was surprised that it was released today because, you know, the accounts usually just post stuff. And then I'm like, oh, it's the actual costume. So I was really excited for it. I think she looks great.
And I don't think that we're missing anything in the DCEU or DCAU world. We know Reign of Superman came out recently. Tati, do you have any impressions on 7 through 9 of Young Justice? Because those come out today as well.
They did come out, and I observed them, and everyone should watch episode 9, because Iris and Bart and the twins are in it, and they have a cute little side plot with all the, like, weirdly, like, regressive, like, moms and kids of, like, all the wives of superheroes, and then Will, who's, like, babysitting, and their kids, and I was like,
I love Will.
This is weird, but anyway, but yeah, but otherwise, that was a really fun episode. I think that, like, there's maybe too much going on in every episode, at least in this section, these, like, threesome, because every episode had, like, four plots, and each plot had, like, 10 characters, and I was like, there are only 20 minutes, I cannot remember who everyone is, please stop. But there was, like, some really fun moments with the team, like, the Outsiders team training, so those are
okay. And I'm, like, three episodes behind Tati always, so I finished 4 through 6 last week, and I'll watch 7 through 9 over the weekend, but, like, the Bowhunters episode, and I forget if it's, I think it's episode, like, 4, when Dick is going to Will, and Will has some conditions for his help, and so they wind up helping him, is, like, an awesome episode. It's so hilarious. And then the other one, this, like, the dynamic between Prince Brian and Halo, and, like, excuse me? That whole, like, I forget what the name of the, I think that's episode 5, I want to say. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of, like, really good, just, like, Young Justice kind of nostalgic, just the same, like, character beats and things that you loved about, like, season 1 and season 2 are still going full force in season 3. And it's just, like, a really good series. But I'm excited to see, like, episodes 7 through 9, especially 9, since that is with Iris and the twins and Bart. So it's, like, whole Flash family goodness. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Moving into Feedback with Gumption, we had a couple different topics that came up. One was really interesting, and it came to us from an Anon, and they were asking us, they said, hey ladies, I was wondering if you could discuss about Supergirl's lack of awareness regarding their neo-Nazi storytelling. There's a bit of a beef on Twitter where a writer tried to clarify that they were not spreading white supremacist propaganda, and that the Agent Liberty episode was to make us angry at Agent Liberty and not side with him, which they failed horribly at, but continuing on. He said, they also have stated that they were not trying to be racist by having the world killers be all women of color and the elite as all POC. Do you ladies think that this is racist, racial ignorance, or coincidence. And then I think another Anon followed up by saying, like, some of the Supergirl friends were throwing shade at a Supergirl writer who asked what was wrong with using Superman catchphrase as a title of an episode. I think it was Eric Carrasco. He opened up a discussion about the whites on Supergirl having better treatment than the POC, which he stated as unintentional. The Supergirl writer has defended the claims for white supremacy by the casting of POC women of color, people of color, women of color as villains are unintentional, and the roles go to the best actors, because I guess Eric said there have been other white villains. And they said that they have tried their best to show both sides, and using Superman's motto as a title for the Supergirl episode, which is Lockwood's episode, they're talking about Man of Steel, that episode, was because they felt that it best fit the story of the episode. The discussion was pretty respectful on both sides, but most fans will still disagree on what the writer has proclaimed. And so we looked up this Twitter discussion online, and like some of the Some of the fans were saying, you know, so Supergirl 413 is titled, "What's so funny about truth, justice, and the American way?" And not, "What's so funny about hope, health, and compassion for all?" I get that it's supposed to be a nod at Superman in comics and all, but would have been nice if the writers used Supergirl's model instead. And someone responded to that saying, "Supergirl became white nationalist propaganda in season 2, so it makes sense," which is when Eric popped in, like, "I'm really interested in why you think this." And then some other... And this is really actually kind of interesting, because for all three of us, we're not really, like, deep into the Supergirl fandom, so... but a lot of the tweets that he was getting in response to this question were hitting on the same things that we've been talking about. So, for example, how problematic Mon-El is, and yet Kara's still made to find him, like, attractive or look to be with him. He's supposed to be... He's problematic, but he's also presented as desirable to Kara. The fact that all of the world killers were women of color, and that Julia and the third world killer, whose name is slipping my mind, and it's probably because she didn't get a lot of story.
Was that Pestilence?
Pestilence. Grace? Like her, Grace. So her stories, their stories weren't really expanded upon the way that you have, like, Mon-El was getting so much screen time, the way that Agent Liberty this season is getting so much screen time to develop his story. And, you know, they died. Julia died a hero, but all the credit went to, you know, Kara and Alex and the Supergirl team. They're like, "We did it!" And I was like, "No, Julia did it!" and the fact that James this season is doing the whole both sides journalism, where he's trying to be understanding towards people that are hateful and really, like, basically Nazis. And that is actually one thing that Eric, in some of his responses, he was like, you know, that is one thing that he says that they recognize, that they made a misstep in, because they weren't supposed to, it wasn't supposed to come off as James playing both sides of the fence. It was supposed to come off as him using journalism to find, I guess, like, a weak spot or something, and to take them down from, like, the inside or whatever. What do you guys, like, reading some of the tweets and seeing what some of the Anons on our Tumblr had to say, what do you think of the whole situation with Eric and the fans, the Supergirl writers in general, about their, you know, at best, ignorance of, or unintentional bias?
Well, yeah, that's what I would, you know, I would give them the benefit of the doubt, and not even, it's not even the benefit of the doubt, I really do honestly believe it's unintentional, but it comes from, like you said, a place of ignorance. Like, when you unconsciously have that bias that you're going to favor white points of view over the point of view of characters of color, just like, you know, you tend to favor a male's point of view over a woman's point of view, a white man's point of view most of all, hence the Mon-El seasons, etc. So it's just a matter of them needing to really listen to what they're being told here and try to, like, dig down deep in themselves, talk to the people in the writer's room that maybe don't have as much of a voice because they're not as high up, right? That maybe could have a more open perspective, and bring in other people. Like, if you're going to do a storyline about white supremacy, basically, but masking it as, you know, alien and human relations, then bring in, like, I don't know, activists that you want to talk to. Like, law shows bring in lawyers as consultants. Hospital shows bring in doctors. You should bring in someone that's able to give you a more realistic view of it and not just our own biased perspectives. Like, you know, because we're like, oh, racism is bad, but so is violence. I'm going to write this season. You know, you've got to have a little bit more nuance than that.
And I think what was interesting to me was about when he was talking about the unintentionality, if that's even a word, of what they've been doing storyline-wise and also in casting, because I know that the writers don't choose specific actors to, you know, be in roles, but at the same time, it's kind of funny that he mentioned that it wasn't colorblind casting and they just chose the actors for the best actors for the role, because that's exactly what people say when it ends up being like an entirely white cast, and they're like, well, we just chose the best actress for the role and you sidelined all the other people who could have diversified your cast. So in this instance, it's like, despite being unintentional about it, it's still, on this show specifically, it's like a pattern, because it is the case where the last two seasons, all the villains have been people of color, or they've been like the ones that are questioned for whatever they think or whatever.
And it's only the villains. They don't. Mm-hmm. There's no like increase in normal or good people of color characters.
Right. And
it's always at best. It's like either misguided people like Manchester or dead ones like Fiona.
Yeah, or like hardliners like Colonel Haley, which you're not supposed to like because she's in opposition to Alex, who you do like at the DEO.
Yeah.
So I know.
So, like, instead of, you know, I don't know about the whole James storyline, because they could have worded what he's saying differently within the script, but also, like, they could work to make it so that they have more pro-aliens and actual aliens sharing their stories rather than focusing on the opposite. So that would help put some balance into their narrative versus like, oh, well, it's all unintentional, but you also have a bunch of episodes where there's no alien in sight giving their perspective and there's no people who are pro-alien either. So it's like...
Right. So how are you as a writer even telling both sides when you're only telling the side of like the Children of Liberty and the alien-hating extremists, so, you know. And I mentioned when I said that, you know, their fans were upset that they were using a Superman model, and I mentioned Man of Steel, but it's actually the title of Port 13, which I said was what's so funny about truth, justice, and the American way, is the Superman motto from Superman comics. It's like, why are you pulling from Superman storylines and characters and everything instead of using Supergirl, because I mean she didn't make her out of thin air. There's a whole comics history of Supergirl stuff. Why do you keep using Superman? And I think Eric specifically said with that one, like the episode 413, I think he said it introduced when they said it, they felt like it fit the episode, and two, I think it featured or introduces like a Superman, someone from Superman lore, so that's why they chose it. But going back to Man of Steel, I didn't like that title specifically because it is about Agent Liberty. So it's not even used in an ironic sense, because it would be one thing if you called it Man of Steel, but then you showed how he's the like antithesis from start to finish of everything that Kara stands for as the Girl of Steel.
Right.
And they didn't do that. And he was saying that, you know, it wasn't their intention for people to find compassion for Agent Liberty. They said you were supposed to hate him. But at the same time, they did this whole, like, you're a good man, Charlie Brown, and had him start out as, like, you know, someone that was pushed over the edge instead of someone that was already over the edge. And it was slowly being, like, revealed as the show went on, which you've talked about, you know, when the episode came out.
Right.
But
even if... going further into it, like, now that we had Lydia, uncover the kind of man that he is, right? And then by the end of the episode, she's on his side.
Right.
So there wasn't even, like, that was an opportunity for them to be like, oh, his wife thinks he's gone too far. And for a second, it was like they're in that way. And they're like, nope, the wife is like, this is a great idea. I totally support this.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's validated throughout the narrative, like, at every turn, so...
Basically, yeah. But because we have some other things to go through in this feedback section, I'm going to move on. So moving into Harry Potter, which is the episode that we did last week. You're a wizard, Barry! Shane sent us some feedback on where he would sort his Hogwarts choices. And he says he's going to start out with my favorite trash show, Supergirl. He thinks that Kara is a Gryffindor. And he knows many people places her as a Hufflepuff. But I kind of think of Kara Danvers, her secret identity persona, as a Huffle. But to what she is Kara Zor-El, she's a Gryffindor. I feel she holds much bravery in her and is stubborn at times, wanting to be in on the action. And her own trauma, alike yet not the same as Barry, gives her more Gryffindor traits. So he feels like she's more on the sliding scale of Gryffindor. She's like a Neville kind of Gryffindor. And then in Quidditch...
But Neville's really a Hufflepuff.
Well, see, there you go.
I'm sorry, J.K. Rowling.
Tati thinks J.K. Rowling is wrong at every turn. Everyone's not a Gryffindor. The lies.
Not everyone who's a main character is a Gryffindor.
He agrees that Alex is a Gryffindor. She's the one to like dive headfirst into danger. And he thinks that she would play Quidditch as a chaser, offense and defense, like the Danvers sisters duo. He thinks that Lena is a Slytherin. And that, like, 100%. And that she would have dreamt to be in Ravenclaw, away from her family. But deep down, she would still feel that she's a Luther, hence not putting up a fight when the Sorting Hat put her in the house. Which I actually,
so
I think... I think it would be true. Like, I think I would agree with that. Like, I would amend my sorting to say that she would have been put in Slytherin because she wouldn't have put up a fight. But, like, deep down, she would want to be, like, a Ravenclaw. And it would also make sense why she'd be Harry's favorite, since he is the head of Slytherin House, and he plays favorites anyway. And so if she's a Slytherin, then that also ties into that headcanon. So I'll accept that one.
I too will accept it.
And he also thinks that his sort of husband, Manchester Black, is also a Slytherin. I solemnly swear I am up to no good. It's definitely his thing. And I think he would play dirty sometimes during Quidditch as a chaser. With regards to the Eric versus Supergirl fan situation, he says, I do agree it is not only him that decides what ends up in the final cut, but seeing how the show can get very problematic, it worries me that the other writers are not being sensitive enough for the theme of this season. And he mentions some of the things that we talked about already about casting people of color and filling roles and fair treatment for every race, the Agent Liberty episode, and so we'll put all of his thoughts on Tumblr so you can read up some more on that. And then one thing that I've got... And this is, like, back up to the intro when we were talking about, like, the Hogwarts houses. It's, like, I got that nod that was, like, why is Kara a Hufflepuff when Hufflepuff is supposed to be she was supposed to be Arco? And I was, like, I don't understand, like, how is, like, wanting to visit your mom that you thought was dead for half your life not being loyal?
Yeah. Hufflepuffs are loyal to their family. Yeah. For sure. And like you said earlier, if that makes Kara a hoe... Because she was going back to Argo. What does that make Clark?
Yeah, like, Clark is, like, super ho. If he doesn't, like, he's not loyal at all. Because, like, Elseworlds, he's, like, you know, this is in the middle of alien hate extremism going on. And he's, like, you know what? Earth is so ghetto right now. Like, whoo, child, ghetto. I'm going to go to Argo to have my child where it's a little bit classier up there. At fault for wanting to visit her mom, then Clark needs to be at fault, surely, for abandoning
her. Yeah, for wanting to raise his baby on another planet? Yeah.
We had another Harry Potter ask from an Anon, and this one's about the Flash, and they had a theory that their headcanon was that Caitlin is actually a Slytherin and not a Ravenclaw. And I was thinking, you know, like, I think Killer Frost is more the Slytherin side of Caitlin. And so, in my head canon, I think whenever Killer Frost is out, that she actually hangs out with a lot of the Slytherins. And so Caitlin tries to avoid, like, Slytherin House because, like, all of the Slytherin people will try to, like, agitate her into bringing out Killer Frost because Killer Frost is a Slytherin. But then, they actually, like, clarified more on what they meant. And with, in their original ask, they're saying that, like, she's a Slytherin because, you know, with the whole Savitar thing and her looking out for number one, that was, like, her self-preservation was her priority. And, like, yeah, that's pretty Slytherin in theory or whatever. But then they went back to clarify to Tati, what else did they say about the reasons why they thought Caitlyn should be a Slytherin?
They said she's proud, she keeps secrets like Nora, and isn't above getting her hands dirty to get what she wants, which is true, like when she decided to traffic metahumans with, with Amunet to get a cure for Killer Frost that Julian was going to give her for free. For nothing but his love. So this is true.
That price is too high.
Exactly. They said Oliver does the same, and he's a Slytherin. But I think Caitlyn is less aware she's doing it, if that makes sense. She's also a bit of a science snob. So, like, not, you know, like, I guess Ravenclaws would be a bit of snobs, too. But, like, in the sense that she thinks she's superior because of what she has chosen, as opposed to other people. And I would say she's also stabbed her friends in the back, but Ravenclaws do that too. Because the girl who outed the DA to Umbridge was a Ravenclaw. Yeah. So yes, Ravenclaws are not above stabbing their friends in the back. But the rest of what they said, I do agree. Like, she can, I think that you could make an argument, and you did make an argument successfully, for Caitlyn being in Slytherin.
I think it's a solid, I understand, yeah, I do. And I think that it's a solid sub-house.
Right.
I still think her Ravenclaw traits shine, are like, are more apparent, are,
yeah.
Like, yeah, but I definitely, you know, I can see where you're coming from as far as, like, Caitlyn being a Slytherin, and her daddy was definitely a Slytherin, so, and her mom was a Ravenclaw, so that little, they just made a little hybrid of both of them.
There you go.
Oh, and then we also had one more, I know this is a long intro, but we had one more, kind of, like, discussion that kicked off. It was a Caitlyn week, y'all.
Yeah.
So the one and on was bringing up the fact that how come Leonard Snart has killed people, has threatened Cisco's lives, has done all of this bad stuff, and he is a fan favorite. He's been forgiven by not only the team, but also the fans. Everybody loves him. Whereas Caitlyn could be, she also did some bad things. She also threatened her friends. And yet she's like the pariah in fandom, and that, you know, everyone won't let it go that she did these things, and they won't forgive her. So there's the, you know, Leonard Snart versus Caitlyn. Why is one forgiven? It's because he's a man, da 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 da. And so we talked about it. I think Megan answered this question.
It did, yes. And I mean, for me, it was like, because Caitlyn was never acknowledged by the actual narrative or any of the characters that she ever really did anything wrong. You know, like, there was no starting point of her being bad. Like, it was brushed off as being, oh, like, Killer Frost is a completely different personality and blah, blah, blah. But there was a lot of instances where Caitlyn was actually doing, like, she was making the choices that she made. Like, when she went to CCPD and got Julian for whatever reason in that one episode and all of that. So being someone's friend and actively going against them to fight for your own life versus trying to save theirs is, like, completely different than starting off as Leonard Snart, who was a villain, was acknowledged as a villain, you know, spoken to condescendingly because he was doing what he was doing and hurting people. And so, like, his turn was more of, like, a surprise. Like, okay, great, he's good, you know, now. He's redeemed himself because he started off on the wrong foot. Versus Caitlyn, right, who was already good and was a friend and then did all of these things, but she never acknowledged her fault, you know, her mistakes. The narrative never acknowledged her mistakes. And all the characters always were like, oh, pat on the back, like, it's okay, whatever you did. So there was no, like, starting point for her to even start a redemption anti-hero story. So that's, right, for me, is, like, the big difference between them.
And I think I agree with that. The difference between the two is that Leonard Snart, you never had any expectations from Leonard Snart at the beginning to be anything other than bad, because that's how he was introduced, that's who he was. And so for him, like, the gradual transition from villain to a good guy, to a legend, is, you know, that is his redemption story. Whereas Caitlyn started out as a friend, she was a good guy. And so for that to turn, and then kind of turn back again with no kind of acknowledgement that of what is happening, or not even if it's acknowledged, it's just kind of, like, brushed off as, like, it's okay. And I don't think she doesn't really have any space to acknowledge or process it, because before she can say, I'm sorry, they're like, no, it's not your fault. So she can't even, like, you know, even if someone's telling you it's not your fault, you're still going to be like, I tried to kill you. What do you mean it's not my fault kind of thing? And so it's kind of like she doesn't have any kind of even space if she wanted to say that she was sorry, because everyone's already, like, pre-telling her, don't worry, it's okay. And I think that is the explicit I'm sorry is what fandom has been waiting for and kind of never gotten. You know, and it's always implied, because you could say that her self-exiling herself, it could be part of, like, her remorse, or even going to Aminette, if that is kind of, like, you know, in her mind, she thinks that she's not good enough to be a hero, so maybe villain criminal Aunt Enterprise is the only thing she's good for now, or whatever, and that's what led her to Aminette, or something like that. But you don't really see any of that, and she never really talks about it, aside from being sorry for what happened to Cecile, so it's kind of hard to gauge. And again, I think in probably in 405, that was probably supposed to be some sort of redemption between her and Iris, specifically Killer Frost and Iris, but it's always kind of, like, implied and kind of, like, brushed over, so.
Yeah, and then it became more like Iris should apologize for not being more than Caitlin's work friend.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say that in general, because I know someone mentioned that it was, like, one of the Anons or the Anon mentioned that it was sexism, and I will say that man or woman, audiences or fans in fandom hate quote-unquote hypocrisy more than they hate anything else. So a character who wants other people to be good but then falters in their own way will get more hate than a murderer who helped an old lady cross the street one day. Because then, that time, the murderer helps the old lady cross the street, they're like, oh my god, they're a good person! whereas, even if Caitlin was a saint, like Iris is a saint 90% of the time, and then the one time that she doesn't want Wally to use his powers, she's a demon, right?
Right.
So that's what it's like. That's what Caitlin went through with the Killer Frost situation. That fandom was like, well, she's a demon now, because not only did she try to kill half of the cast, but she didn't really get to apologize. And most importantly, she didn't apologize to Iris. She instead apologized, or to Cecile. She apologized to Joe.
Or to Cecile, yeah.
Yeah, like, if it's not just like a Caitlin Iris thing, she didn't even, like, you know, get to a chance to really talk through it with Cisco either.
Right. So she didn't apologize to the people that she actually hurt. But she did apologize to Joe for hurting his women. So, whatever. And also, I mean, it's just, like, more of the same of what you guys are saying, just that she doesn't get an arc to grow from it, so it's not treated in the narrative as a flaw, which is why fandom compensates for it by making it a flaw every time they talk about her. If it was treated like a flaw in the narrative, then we would just all move on. But we cannot move on because we did not get closure.
Exactly.
Right. And as we were talking about this, it kind of, like, when May said that, you know, she was looking out for self-preservation over the preservation of her friends' lives, it's like, that's Charlie. Because in Legends of Meow Meow, she's like, as long as I have my powers back, you just, like, change everything else until it's, like, sort of okay. And we put her in Slytherin, so maybe there is a case for Caitlin as a Slytherin. So you're onto something, Anon. But anywho, we are going to move on to what actually happened this week on The Flash. Tati's going to break down, or I guess, like, lead us through the discussion on The Flash. So, Tati, take it away.
That is what I'm going to do. This week on The Flash, Barry was busy filming the crossover, so he just got hit with, like, vibrational issues as soon as this chick named, I literally just forgot her name. Silver Ghost?
Silver Ghost, Rhea Van Sant.
Yes, Rhea Van Sant. Stole a car and went all fast and furious, like the name of the episode. So, he's stuck in the pipeline, vibrating away, having to quarterback Nora from behind the scenes. And in the meantime, Silver Ghost breaks out the lovely Joss, Weather Witch. And Weather Witch does not want to get broken out. She wants to pay for her sins. So she asks Nora for help. But Nora, having just been quote-unquote betrayed by her bestie, Eobard Thawne, has now realized that bad guys are literally the worst. So she sends her ass right back to jail, leading to a series of mishaps in which Joss eventually has to save Nora from being hit by the invisible car. So now Nora has learned that maybe sometimes bad guys can be good, and that means I guess she'll break Eobard Thawne out of jail 30 seconds before it's time for him to die. Meanwhile, Sisko has decided that metahuman powers suck, and he's going to eliminate them. And Caitlin is like, don't do that, but then they agree that they'll do it sometimes, and then not other times. And that's what you missed on The Flash. So, ladies, what did we like about this episode?
That was a good recap.
Thank you. I forgot that I was supposed to do one, so it just came to
me. I also forgot that you're supposed to do one. I like this episode. I know a lot of people had some issues with it and didn't like it, but I liked it. I thought it was very decent. You know, it wasn't like the best episode ever, but I thought it was a very decent filler episode. My favorite of my favorites was the addition of Rhea Van Zandt, a.k.a. Silver Ghost, and her team-up slash reluctant partnership with Josh Jockham, a.k.a. Weather Witch. I thought they were great additions. The Flash has been kind of on a trend recently of having more badass, independent of a man, female villains. Like, I just remember, like, season one, like, every female villain we had, they were always, like, dying or not in control of their powers or, you know, got into the situation because their dumbass ex-boyfriend, whatever, whatever. So I like this trend of, like, really badass villains in their own right, kind of female villains. Rhea seems like a 2019 version of Snart, which is kind of appropriate that she's trying to rebuild the Rose on her own. But ironically, like, Joss gets the Snart parallel, but I feel like Rhea's more of, like, the Snart because she's, like, the planner, and she embraces being a bad guy, and she's, like, clearly thinking beyond her next heist, and she has a vision of what she wants the Rose Gallery to be like. Which, side note, like, when did the Rogues actually become known as the Rogues? Because I don't know that they actually named themselves in the narrative.
They didn't.
Maybe Iris used it once in her newspaper, and that's now what they're called. I don't know. But anyway, whatever it is, I'm here for it. Her Meditech is cool. Her Sam, the stealth automobile, is cool. And it was built with Wayne Tech, which, hello.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that keyboard emoji, like, that's the only thing. Like, the stupid little keyboard emoji in the car is just killing me. Like, all of this tech, all of this money went into this car, and they have a keyboard emoji. Like, panel. I don't trust it. That sounds fake to me. She's really cool. I want to be in a girl. I really like Joss as a character in her first episode back in 507. Even though her kind of plot that week was a little bit underwhelming, I liked her. And so I like that she's brought back. I was a little bit skeptical when she hit Cecile with that whole second wave of remorse. But over the course of the episode, I really got to see what Cecile felt in those seconds in the courtroom. And I know it took Nora like a minute to get there, but I feel like eventually she warmed up to the idea that Joss could change. And even though Joss was, she ultimately decided to stick with Rhea and join the bad girl gang. I like how it was left a little bit open-ended in that Joss, like, clandestinely, like, secretly saved Nora's life without tipping off Rhea. So, you know, crack shipping all over the place. Excess weather is my new jam. I didn't miss Barry at all this episode, which I don't know what that means, but, like, he didn't really play a big part of the episode, even from the pipeline. He didn't really have a say in, like, strategizing, and I'm not even sure if the team kept him up to date on what was going on. He was just, like, isolated and knew nothing about anything. Like, he was Jon Snow for, like, an episode. But in his place, I think Iris had the two key moments in the episode. So, one, she is the one that IDs the villain and obtains her background information from the DOD. And then, two, she knows she's the one that notices, like, Nora's attitude towards Joss and finds a way to talk to her that is not considered by Nora to be, like, aggressive, because Nora is, like, very super sensitive. And so she found a way to get through to Nora with the heavy assist from Barry to get Nora to, like, come around and see Joss could change. She definitely could have been in the episode more, but the key for me is that the scenes that she did have were very important to moving the narrative forward. And I also, this is another like another unpopular opinion, but I like the Cisco Caitlin subplot. I thought it took up an appropriate amount of time as a B plot, and it actually took up less time than I thought it would, considering like 5-10 description was like killer vibe and nothing else. So it actually fit in well for me. And I think the to cure or not to cure argument played out better in the episode than it did when it was previewed. Like, Todd did, he did a horrible job, to be honest, of, like, hyping up the storyline. Because it made it seem like it was a Caitlin thing. And that she, you know, again going back on her bullshit about, like, wanting to get rid of Killer Frost after she spent, like, a whole season and a half trying to get her back. But actually, in the episode, it was refreshing for me that it wasn't Caitlin winning the cure, but Cisco. And the storyline was more about Cisco's point of view with Caitlin's, which is, it was more about Cisco's point of view than Caitlin's, which is rarely ever the case when it's a subplot involving those two. There's big parts of the storyline that I don't like, though, which I'll get to later, but I like that Caitlin is at least consistent now and that she wants to stay a meta. And I think that Cisco makes a good point about metas like Fallout, whose powers are like detrimental not only to themselves, but also to society and the people that can't control it, the people that don't want this power and responsibility, you know, making something for them. And so I think that they're addressing and taking responsibility for creating metas, which is something that I don't think that has been adequately addressed before within the Flash team. So I thought all of that was good.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'll start by saying I'm really glad the Flash continues to pass the Bechdel test in this season, even in the smallest of ways. Like, I think this is legitimately the first season where it's not just one episode out of 22 that women are talking to each other about something other than a man. And that's nice. So small steps. Really enjoyed that we got to see Cecile's first day back at work and that the West Allen family went to support her. And I love that the show remembered both Barry and Nora were CSIs. And then we got to see the aftermath of a metahuman facing trial and sentencing, which is a first for the show. I also like that Nora took it upon herself to stand in for her dad. And it was just her, Iris, and Cecile chatting and making sure it all played in their favor, even though they had opposing views about it. And I like that, like Jess said, that Iris was shown like getting information from an inside source and that she picked up on Nora's behavior towards Joss and that her conversation with her about allowing people second chances was like, it was really soft and not at all admonishing. And same with Barry's conversation with her later. So both parents' discussion with her were light, but with a weight of seriousness to them that were palatable for Nora without having it escalate. And they've both come a long way with parenting, I think. Iris with the way that she and Nora engage with each other, and Barry being more thoughtful in the way he reacts to her. And I really loved Rhea. She was really cool, knew what she wanted, and I like that her backstory is a little muddled and also didn't completely align with the whole all metas of the week are 100% bad. So she was discharged from the military under shady circumstances, which is interesting, and I thought she was memorable overall. And I also like that they brought Joss back and gave her some spotlight as well. Just by her face, I did truly believe she was feeling remorse and wanted to start over, and I liked her connection with Nora. And I also like that she's getting a chance to be herself without necessarily being tied to her famous criminal dad. And I also like that we're getting more female villains and that this episode centered two female metahumans of color, so it's a nice change. And while I also have issues with the parallels, it was nice to see Nora be a bit more mature in how she reacted to learning from her parents and that she was ultimately able to get through to Joss. And finally, though many parts of this will go in my dislike section, I did like that we got some Cisco focus and that he had his own reasons for wanting to make a cure. And I continue to love Cisco and Caitlin's friendship and this sudden reemerging focus of how important they are to each other was really nice.
Aww, I agree with that. But I will not start with that. Instead, I will start with... So I've heard lots of complaints from the fandom, at least our side of the fandom, because I don't check anyone else. And I get where they're coming from. Like, I don't think... It definitely wasn't my favorite episode, and definitely wasn't the most exciting episode to come back on. And I think we'll be addressing most of the dislikes in our dislike section, especially my own issue with how they rate Cisco. But stepping outside of like that perspective, I really enjoyed the episode quite a bit, much more than I expected to, even though Jessica is completely right that it was, for the most part, filler. First, I thought the writers did a good job of accommodating Grant's need for a smaller role this week. Like she said, I didn't miss him. I could tell that he was in it less than normal, but I wasn't like, oh, Barry needs to be doing something. So, so I thought they did a good job, and I liked him having to sort of, like, give his opinion from the background, right? Having to be in the pipeline, and you could feel his frustration, but you also, he got to be, like, a bit of an advice giver again, which was nice. I also thought it was great that they had that cute little Legends shout-out where he's reading Mix Erotica. That was really fun. Speaking of shout-outs, I loved that the car that Joss and Rhea stole came from Argus and was Wayne Tech. So, like, that's how you create the feeling of interconnectedness without overshadowing the main show in question. And the Arrowverse could certainly use more of that. Speaking of Joss and Rhea, I thought they made an excellent team, even though Joss was reluctant for most of it. I like that The Flash is going out of its way to include more women this year. Whether it's purposeful or not, they've been including more women of color, specifically. And they really dug their heels in with the theme of the episode, right? That, like, people aren't born bad, or just, like, just because you did something bad doesn't mean you're bad forever, etc. Because first they had Rhea branded a criminal, like, before she did anything wrong, right? She's acting like one now because she was put in that position in the first place. And they also had Joss deeply regret the things she did do wrong. So I thought that was an interesting way to make Nora reflect on her storyline. And I've always thought the best episodes, not just of this show, but of any show, are ones that take a theme and then have every storyline reflect that theme in some way, right? It makes it feel like a unified whole, like you're really watching one complete story and not four lines waiting, right? Anyway, and also considering how forgettable the Flash villains have been since, like, season two, I thought it was a nice change of pace that, like, we like Joss, we remember Joss, and we probably will remember her in the future. She definitely has potential for a Young Rogues type of scenario. And in that vein, I really liked Nora versus Joss. I thought it made a lot of sense. We got some good opportunity to explore Nora's feelings about the supposed betrayal from Abarth. And they had some good chemistry, not just necessarily like, oh, I ship it. Every woman that Nora comes in contact with from now on, I will ship.
Hey.
Which, I will. I'm not saying I won't. I will. I'm there. I'm just saying that aside from that, canonically speaking, like, I really felt like it could be, like, a version of Flash and Captain Cold. It really had that kind of feel, like the Barry and Leonard kind of feeling. And they gave really obvious parallels to that, so that's obviously what they were going for. So congratulations, you succeeded. I also like that each of her parents got the chance to talk things through with her, and that Iris gave such, like her advice was, like, on point, even though she didn't actually know what was happening. Like you said, she could innately tell what was happening, and she was able to reach out to her. So it's nice to see them on even footing and on solid ground after the shaky start to their dynamic this season. Also, I just really like how Cecile really feels like part of the family. Like, she slid right in, just replaced Joe. It's just 100%, there's no problem here. But yeah, so it really just feels like a nice little family unit. So, like, I loved all of them going to support her on her first day back. And I loved that random judge who was like, wow, you need more maternity leave. It's never long enough. I was like, oh, that's so cute. This random judge was like, I'm woke. So yeah, I actually thought, like, at first I didn't understand what was going on when she was feeling the wave of remorse. I was like, what's happening right now? Is that, like, some extra power? I forgot about her, you know, still being an empath. So I was like, uh-oh. Or I was like, is she, like, having, like, phantom pregnancy pains?
Right.
What's happening?
Like, oh, birth, like, contractions
or whatever. Yeah. But anyway, so I thought we were going to go somewhere with that because of what the judge said. But no, he was just being very supportive. Anyway. So yeah, so in general, I did think that the episode handled the theme of second chance as well. And I know that, like, people are annoyed about the fact that Nora trusts the Reverse Flash and that Barry even said that people deserve second chances, but that feels to me like something that Barry would say. That seems totally in character to me. That he does think that everyone, he gives far too many second chances. He even tried to give Savitar a second chance. So, I don't know. I feel like this is normal and in character for me. Also, I love that the defense attorney brought up that, you know, like, I thought it was a decent point when he was like, oh, the staff causes damage, so, and the staff has the power, so couldn't the staff have corrupted her? And I was like,
right.
Well, Joss is a different person now without the staff, and we have seen evidence of meta powers corrupting their hosts, like Dr. Alchemy and Killer Frost. So, like, why can't meta objects do that as well? No reason why not. And yeah, like I said, like, scary if he had known that Nora was like seconds away from releasing Reverse Flash from like death row, he probably wouldn't have said what he said. But the point still stands, because he's the hero of the story. And if he doesn't see the best in people, then who is going to? I really liked it when he said that. I was like, yeah, like, that is what he stands for. And it's also something that Iris stands for, and something that Iris has done from the start. Like, she's the one who looked Tony Woodward and Reverse Flash in the face in season one, and she said, you don't have to do this. Like, there is another way. When Reverse Flash was literally going to kill her, she was like, you're the one that killed Barry's mom. Why don't you try being nice for a change? So, like, this is definitely a thing that she would do. Finally, I really love the last scene between Caitlin and Cisco. I like when she supports him, when she's actively helping him with something that he needs. And I like that they, like, you know, verbally agreed that they would never force their, like, someone to lose their powers or use it against someone's will. Also, Carlos did a great job this episode. Like, his little I want a family speech would kill, like, kill me. I was, like, tearing up over it. He's just such a good actor. And I love their hug, but bullshit is what much of the episode contained as well. So why don't we discuss that side of things?
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like my complaints are a lot longer. They don't accurately reflect how I enjoyed the episode. But, like, the complaints that I do have are just, like, really, like, deep, deep complaints. Like, rant-inducing complaints. But I'll start off with, like, a nitpick of what I didn't like. The only reference that Elseworlds was a thing that happened, you know, a couple months ago, is Nora mentioning that she thought Barry would be tired of wearing green. And that reference was so subtle, I had no idea what she was talking about. I was like, what green suit? Like, Barry only has two suits, thank you very much, that he wears on formal occasions. So, like, when in the fresh, tacky hell did he pick up a green suit? And it wasn't until, like, an hour later, like, after the episode, that I saw someone talking about it. Someone picked up on Twitter that it was an Elseworlds reference, and I was like, oh, okay.
And I didn't get it until just now, so thank you for that.
Yeah.
Like, you and me both may. At least it's news to me.
I was like, what green suit? What the fuck is she talking about? And it was like, this is an event that was so major. This is Elseworlds was so major that it directly affects the crossover next year. And, like, glossing over it is just kind of a little weird. Because it was just, like, so mostly so important. But that one, like, offhanded comment spoken by Nora, who wasn't even, like, how do you know that your dad wore a green suit? You weren't even there. So, like, the whole thing was a little bit off to me. So I didn't really, yeah. That was just, like, kind of a nitpick thing. But, again, like, while it's understandable that Barry was sidelined so much of this episode because Grant needed to finish Elseworlds, so I get that, but seeing as how they refused to let Iris cross over to any other shows during that Elseworlds crossover, Candace's schedule should have been wide open for Iris to appear more than she did in the episode. And, like, not to take away from the episode, because I do think it was a solid episode, it did feel as though Iris was being sidelined because Barry was sidelined. I was like, just because Barry's not there, why can't Iris be there? They're not attached to the hip. So Iris should be able to function without Barry just as much as he is clearly able to function without her around. Like, in the scenes that she did have, she got, like, the most important material of having the heart-to-heart of Nora. But then Nora has to reconfirm what Iris just told her with Barry, which brings me to, like, another point. Why are all of Nora parent scenes, and I ranted about this on Twitter a little bit, but, like, why are all of Nora and her parent scenes only with one parent at a time? Like, it wouldn't have been more effective and efficient for Iris and Barry to talk to Nora together. Like, if Iris saw her running, it's like, you know, come here for a second, and then go down and visit Barry, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like, is there some rule that Nora can't have discussions or do activities with both her parents at the same time? Like, I don't get it. In the beginning, like, the tension between Nora and Iris was the excuse for her only focusing on Barry, and then when the ice finally began to thaw between her and her mom, she started reconnecting with her mother separately from Barry. Also understandable. However, even though now they're all on the same page, the only things they are shown doing together as the actual family are entering and exiting scenes. Like, we all came in together. We are all leaving the scene together. And that's the only thing that they do. So, like, yes, Nora missed out on developing a relationship with her father, but you know what else she also missed out on? She also missed out on building memories with both of her parents together at the same time, living in a two-parent household. So, like, and I'm already, like, pre-complaining because next week, I assume, is the 5-11, the ice skating, and the snippet of the trailer that we have is just Barry and Nora ice skating. And it's like a father-daughter only activity. Someone brought up that, you know, Danielle had an Instagram story with like ice skates, but then another not actually clarified that that was for her movie Christmas Joy. So we don't even know who else is there. It could be like a whole group is there, and which means that Iris is on the sideline watching her daughter and her husband have fun without her, which sucks. Or it's just Barry and Nora, which also sucks because Iris wouldn't be there at all. And like the only thing that was, you know, the scene is cute, but I mean, it would have been cuter if it was Iris is out there too, and Barry is daring both of his wife and his daughter to race, knowing that Nora can't skate and that the Flash could easily beat his wife. So, I mean, like, those kind of things, like, just, you know, it's cute, but there could have been more. And they're just, like, missing out on it because Nora can only talk to one pair at a time. And it's kind of like, you know, I don't know. Let Barry, Iris, and Nora do things together. Challenge 2019, please. Moving on to Nora and Thawne and that whole situation. Obviously, we know that Nora continues to work with Thawne in the future, so I know that the point of the whole is Joss redeemed or not storyline was a, like, conduit for Nora to forgive Thawne and for that partnership to continue so we could keep getting the story. But comparing Joss to Eobard is like comparing apples to a nuclear bomb. Like, there's just no comparison between the two. And the fact that they use Barry, of all people, to force the storyline forward makes it even worse for me. Like, Barry only said what he thought Nora needed to hear to help her through her present situation. And I agree with Tati that there's no way that he would have said this, you know, the same thing if he knew why she was really asking. And it wasn't about Joss, it was more about Eobard. And even if he did believe his own bullshit, he would still never approve of Nora working with Thawne or being anywhere near him. Like, yeah, he can change, but you're still not going to go near him because he killed my mom. He's the source of all of our family trauma for years and years and years. He can be, like, good over there, but not over here. And, like, I answered about, like, Thawne in general, the fact that he has Tom's face. I answered an ask on Tumblr about how disappointed I was that Eobard being played by Tom and not Matt. And this episode only heightened that disappointment for me, and that it feels like Tom has even forgot how to be Eobard. Like, all of his acting choices were super weird to me, especially the whole whisper voice thing, which was really annoying. And that's actually, like, Harry's thing. That's not even Eobard's thing. So, like, he doesn't even remember his, you know, voice choices for the different characters. And then the acting in general, I think, was probably, like, the worst that I think Tom has done, like, the whole series. It was just all exaggerated and very dramatic. It's like, oh my god, I wanted to be so cool like the Flash, and I didn't. And it's like, you know, okay, calm down. I just have to believe that it's on purpose. Like, Eobard is, like, really, like, putting on a show and, like, being acting, like, horribly on purpose or whatever, and she's believing it or whatever. And speaking of that, like, this whole, like, redemption for Eobard, it's not something I care about. I hope it's not an actual thing. Like, he better be bullshitting just because he doesn't want to die. Like, wrapping up decades of rivalry and struggle as I've changed off-screen is a cheap cop-out for me. And I don't think the show has really, like, the kind of authority or the depth to write an end to his legacy. So we'll see. Hopefully he'll do the villain thing and be like, psych, I guess I will not be good because I'm not going to die in 30 seconds. So, you know, like, that's another thing, like, let villains be villains, 2K19. And then my final big push thing that I disliked was the whole getting into the Cisco-Caitlin storyline. As I mentioned in my likes, I actually like the B-plot, but what I didn't like is that the cure for issue for Cisco came out of nowhere, it seemed like. I never knew that being Vi was a problem for him, that he until he, like, brought it up 7 episodes later after he got hurt. Like, we know in season 2, it was an issue that he was scared of. And then once he became Vibe, he was Vibe, and it was never brought up again until 7 episodes after Death of Vibe. So, like, the thing was, oh, you know, he tried to kill you, so now you don't want to be a meta anymore. But we didn't get that kind of progression. Like, if the cure storyline is where Death of Vibe was leading, there should have been some hints to get us up to 5-10. It would have been nice to see him kind of, like, vocalize liking being back behind the monitor. And, you know, the whole, like, he spent a lot of time, they spent a lot of time saying or that he is mourning his, the loss of his relationship with Cynthia, but you don't see any of that kind of same energy towards him being okay with not being bi. And from Killer Frost's perspective, like, sure, she doesn't want to disappear or take the cure, and that's her and Caitlin's choice, but it still doesn't explain why she'd have a problem with other metas exercising their choice and taking the cure. So, like, Cisco and Caitlin already agree that they won't cure people against their will, so I don't know why the fuck she's being, like, so aggy about the whole situation. And I feel like the dumbest line that she said was, I get it, he tried to kill you, you're trying to find a way to save us all. I'm like, okay, so if you get it, then, like, what's the problem? Like, why are you still, like, against this? Is there, like, another part of that line that she didn't get to say? Like, I don't know. So that was, well, I guess, I think it's in 5-11 where she and Ralph have some alone time, so maybe we'll get, like, more of her perspective, but right now it just seems very odd that she'd still be against it. And then, like, other little nitpickies to end my long-ass rant. The Weather Vane is Meditech, not Joss. So, like, her defense attorney was saying, it's the Weather Vane that's the villain. So why necessarily did Rhea need Joss specifically to use it? Like, why couldn't, if Joss didn't want to do it, why couldn't she just, like, steal the tech and get somebody that does want to use it? And then also, like, I know why, but why couldn't they just put power-dampening cuffs on Barry instead of locking him in the pipeline? Like, he's vibrating out of control. Wouldn't Meta handcuffs do the same thing as a pipeline and, like, dampening his powers? That could have been an easy solution, but of course they needed Grant out of the way. And I think they still need to do a better job of incorporating Killer Frost and her skill set if they're going to have her out on the field. Like, she didn't get knocked out this episode, so that's a plus, but it's not like she helped much either. She built a wall, which they phased through, and that was it. And she just kind of, like, stands around a lot until it's time to, like, make a funny quip. So, I mean, she could at least, like, I don't know, she doesn't seem very active. She could have tried to, like, chase him with, like, an ice bridge or something. I don't know. But it's still, it's getting better, but it's not quite there. She's not integrated as well as she could be, I think. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
As much as I appreciated Cisco getting to voice his perspective, I don't understand where him not wanting his powers is also suddenly coming from, like you. Especially since we've always known him to be really happy about his powers. To me, it would have made more sense if this had been built up since the death of Vibe and even tied it back maybe to his breakup with Cynthia, because we know he was grieving that relationship for a few episodes. Like, if he said that breaking up with Cynthia because he felt tied to the team and using his powers to help others in the city had stood in the way of him letting Cynthia go and possibly building a family with her, then it might have made a little bit more sense to not want them anymore if he felt that he would be finally free of that burden. Or even if the fear that Cicada killing him simply because he has powers has changed his outlook on whether they're a gift or a curse would have also made sense, but we got none of that. Because if it's about being normal and having a family, not being Flash hasn't stopped Barry from doing that. So I would have appreciated more of a consistent buildup before venturing down this road with Cisco. And I mean, even saying that I want to create a metahuman cure because people should have the choice to get rid of their powers since they had no say in them in getting them to begin with would have been enough of a reason. Like, I think season one was it Plastique who didn't really want her powers. And then also letting, if like they let metas know that Cicada is after them, that would probably make them want the cure too. So, I don't know. It just could have made a little bit more sense. And then Killer Frost's motivation didn't make any sense either to me. Like, she was against Cisco making a metahuman cure, but she's also technically not a metahuman. Isn't like her powers weren't made from dark matter. So then why is she bothered by something that could potentially help others? Like, I guess we could file this under Killer Frost looking out for number one, which is consistent, but there would be no harm that would come to her given that the show's established her powers have nothing to do with dark matter. So I was like, Killer Frost made no sense. Caitlin's fine. Like, Killer Frost, like, throwing the cure against the wall didn't make any sense to me. And I was also underwhelmed by the Eobard being good stuff that Nora had going on. So she took out all her anger on Joss, even though that what she did and what she was doing this episode was not at all comparable to Eobard being a murderer, manipulative, obsessive. And Nora should know he and Joss are not one and the same, because we're under the presumption that even though she didn't know he killed her grandma, that he was still her dad's arch nemesis when she started working with him. So the giving him a second chance didn't really apply here. And obviously there wasn't enough Iris. Like, in an episode specifically locking Barry away, I wish we'd seen more of Iris and Nora bonding. Iris really, you know, she really got the short end of the stick in this episode. And for me, not every conversation between her and Nora has to somehow involve Barry. Like, I get it, Barry's gone right. in the future, but Nora should also be soaking up and capitalizing on some much-needed intention-free mom time. And Iris could have also been seen, like, reporting or writing, so Central City is not just going to appear out of thin air. But I digress.
Central City Citizen?
Yeah, Central City Citizen, yeah. And it was also a bit frustrating to me because this seems to keep happening, that Nora, after her mother told her the exact same thing about giving people a second chance, only gave credit to her dad helping her see the light. Like, she could have just said, thanks to you both for helping me see that some people deserve a second chance, rather than erasing Iris's talk with her. And I also agree with Jess that this show needs to start giving all three of them scenes together, because Nora's acting like her parents are divorced and she can't talk to them at the same time.
And it's funny because she says, like, Iris says, if you don't believe me, go ask your dad.
Yeah.
So Nora going to ask her dad is like, she doesn't believe her mom.
Right, exactly. And finally, I also miss Matt as a Reverse Flash. I think he had more of an unhinged, maniacal aspect to his character. And I like that. And I like that a lot. So I found Tom's performance in this episode a little bit underwhelming. And I don't buy for a second that Eobard has changed his ways, but I'd like to see more of that mischievous glint in his eyes. But overall, I know that my dislikes were also long, but it was a decent filler episode, but it wasn't really exciting for a mid-season premiere and setup for the rest of the season.
Yes. I agree in general, like, that. Yes, that's it. No, it was, you know, decent filler, but it wasn't that exciting. Now, and on to my, like, actual dislikes. First, just kind of just nitpick, but, like, is Cecile feeling that Joss is remorseful and therefore pushing for a lighter sentence, like, actually how the law works? Or how it should work? Because it was, like, first I was like, she's the prosecution, she's not the defense. Like, if the defense did that, then that would make total sense, right? Like, if she'd even just, like, slipped to the defense, like, oh, why don't you try it this way? Then that would have made more sense to me than her actually being like, let me try to trial the Flash this and do my job badly again. Like, I don't know. It's kind of strange. Like, I get what she's doing as a character, but it was kind of laughable for her to do it, like, as a lawyer, right? Like, I got what the writers were going for, but it made her look silly. And then, yes, then we have the issue of Tom Cavanaugh continuing to play Eobard. He did a great job with him in season one. He definitely started off the character. He made the character, the character was already iconic, but for the show, he made the character iconic. But it's just, you know, it's overstayed its welcome. He's whispering like he's Batman. I can't understand the dialogue that he is saying. And then plus him playing Sherlock in that ridiculous accent as well. It's just like too much Tom in too many places. And I know that someone asked, in an interview, they asked Todd, like, if Eobard being back in the picture means less Sherlock. And he said no, and I want to die. So, I need it to be stopped. I love Tom. I think he's great. But I think that, I don't know, maybe they're giving him too much free reign with Eobard and with Sherlock. I don't know what it is. But right now, Eobard is kind of, like, feeling like more of, like, a parody of himself.
I wonder if there's, like, because in season one, it's that he literally changed his body to be Harry's, right? Yeah, like, I'm wondering, yes, like, if he's, like, you know, released or whatever, could he ever, like, get his own body back or something? But I don't think they're planning on doing that.
My headcanon is now that he is a member, he worships the faceless god from Game of Thrones, and he's decided that is his face, because
I would even welcome him getting a new face. Like, it doesn't even have to be Matt. If he can't go back to Matt, give him, like, a new face.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But, yeah, anyway. So, yeah, that was a little bit annoying. Moving on, my biggest issue is that I want more Iris, and that I don't know why Iris was not given more to do in an episode that is very light. I think it's the perfect opportunity to have her actually getting some journalism done. Like, she could have been, you know, following the story of Joss's trial, right? And she could have been there to support Cecile, but also because she's doing a piece on metahumans and remorse, or, you know, meta-objects. Are they the real criminal? Like, whatever. There's any number of angles that she could have taken. even if like she hadn't started with that decision, but like once she started investigating about Rhea, then she could have made that into a more active role in the episode. It would have been cool if she actually exposed the corruption in the military that led to Rhea's dishonorable discharge, instead of just like telling it to Nora so that Nora could be nicer to her. At the very least, like you guys already pointed out, give her and Barry a scene together with Nora instead of dividing it up into two different scenes. And dividing things up unnaturally is actually how I felt about the Cisco and Caitlin storyline. Because I understood where it was coming from, I liked the conclusion, but I thought it took too many scenes to get to the conclusion, because it should have been obvious from the start. Because, like, I don't know why Caitlin would think that Cisco would ever force drugs or injections or whatever he's going to be doing on people in order to stop them from becoming metas. And I don't know why the dialogue made it sound like that was what Cisco was going to do, because I don't think that that's what would happen. In my mind, the whole storyline could have been one two-minute scene where she's like, what are you doing, Cisco? And he's like, I'm trying to keep my vibe powers in check. Is that really something you want? Yeah, for off-screen reasons, but I won't use it on anyone else unless they ask. Sounds great, Cisco! Bye! End of storyline. Anyway, the more important thing that I had a problem with in that storyline was that I don't like that Cisco came to that decision without screen time devoted to that change. Because I think May provided some excellent options for how they could have come up with that change. Like, especially the Cynthia one, since they were harping on that in early episodes, but then they just kind of dropped it. That would have been a great one. But in the scene where he talked about wanting a family and not wanting to disappear on them, I was like, that's the perfect opportunity for them to acknowledge the elephant in the room that is Barry's disappearance, right? It would make so much sense if Cisco wants to get rid of his own powers, because he doesn't want to be Barry. He said, I don't want to be I'm not the Flash and I don't want to be. He doesn't want to be like Barry, leaving behind Iris and Nora without any warning one day, you know? Like, that makes total sense. But because no one wants to acknowledge this plotline, because it's not time for the plotline yet, it just makes it sound like Cisco woke up one day and was like, man, human powers are terrible and I want to get rid of them. Anyway, like, even if they just had a couple of scenes of him making a sad face in Nora Iris Barry moments, that would be superior to the nothing that they gave us. But that would, of course, require for the show to actually mine the material of Barry's appearance, and for the show to give one single fuck about writing Cisco. And neither of those things are happening. So, alas, we don't get that. And instead, they just went with the third option of him just doing what Caitlin wants for, like, six episodes, and then one throwaway pep talk where she says, Cisco's better than Vibe! And now he's like, that was so true, Caitlin! I'm gonna get rid of Vibe entirely.
I'm gonna take your comment to the extreme. Get rid of Vibe altogether.
So, there we go. Those are my dislikes. Short and sweet, I hope. Now, let's move on to our predictions. Where do we think the season's going?
Well, sticking with my gut that I don't buy Thawne's, like, crocodile tear theatrics that he put on for Nora. He saw her with her dad in the past in 508, right? And so he had to assume that she got there because she was working with him, because he's smart and he knows that. And he also would have had to assume that Barry would have told her after this meeting that, you know, we don't trust him, he killed my grandmother, da 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 da. And he would have decades to plan out how he was going to groom Nora to help him in the first place. So, of course, he'd have contingency plans for whenever she found out, like, the worst things about him. Like, you killed my grandmother, I don't want to work with you. And then he can be like, oh no, but, you know, I'm so sad and blah 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 blah. So, I feel like he would have had this story already, like, in his back pocket for in case Nora wanted to stop working with him seconds before he was about to die. So I hope that pays off. Because I thought the countdown timer was weird. So I wonder if he was supposed to detonate when time ran out, which is kind of like that's pretty like a fucked up way to be on death row, just waiting for your timer to go off.
That's what I thought was stupid. That is indeed fucked
up. So, like, obviously he wants Nora to break him out of prison, and then hopefully, like, all hell breaks loose, and he's like, psych! Thanks for letting me out, but no thanks to being good forever. And then also, like, the file that Rhea, we watched the episode, the file that Rhea gave Joss, she's like, I don't even know who you are. She gave Joss a copy of the Spin Zone, which is Spencer, and it had Spencer's picture and all this kind of stuff. So, maybe Spencer is Rhea's next recruit, which means we could be seeing her again.
Ooh.
And then we also know that Peekaboo is coming back, I think, was it episode 11 or 12?
Ish. Yeah, it's 11, yeah.
Yeah, so we saw, like, a picture of her. And so I hope that she is there to be, like, the veteran of the girl gang and not that she's Cicada's next victim. So we'll see.
You got any thoughts, May?
No, I'm just very excited about what's to come. So I will... I haven't formulated any actual predictions. But I'm just really excited for future Iris and the reveal of Mr. Twin West Allen.
Mr. Twin.
We don't know what his name will be.
Right. I'm really hoping that they go with either Francis or Joe, but Joseph or Francis, but it's fine if they go with Don, I guess. Anyway.
I guess.
Well, Don only works if her name is Don too, otherwise there's no point to it.
It could be his middle name.
That's true. I want it to be Francis, Donovan, and Allen. They're West Allen. Francis, Donovan, West Allen. Okay. If I am right, then this will belong in my likes. But I think that Cisco's current, you know, quote-unquote cure for metahumans is going to come back and end up being what Iris originally used to keep Nora from finding out about her powers. So if we make changes to what Cisco's doing in the present, then that will change the course of Nora's life in the future, and we will see the ripple effect of it being a new timeline. There we go.
Interesting.
I know.
That could definitely be possible.
Interesting
Another thing that could happen, I'm just going off of what your prediction is, but if they announce that they've made, like, a metahuman cure, and the justice system gets a hold of it, then any criminal that gets caught could be forcibly metacured.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be, like, an ethical issue as well.
Yep. So even though they've decided they're not going to use another people, that does not mean that that's how it's going to work out for them.
Right.
So, yeah. All right. Speaking of things not working out the way that they were intended to, let's move on to Supergirl. Now, for the rest of the podcast, what we're going to be doing is simply recapping a bit of the last episode, you know, so that everyone remembers where we left off. Giving you guys, like, the episode descriptions that are coming up, maybe one or two spoilers that we've heard, and then sort of predicting, or maybe not at all predicting, maybe we are terrible predictions, what we think is coming for the shows. So, Supergirl. Last year on Supergirl, Nia's psychic powers and alien self revealed to Kara and Brainy, who helped her hone and control said power so that she could aid in the capture of Ben, a.k.a. Agent Liberty. In the midst of capturing him, Kara and John had to prevent Manchester Black from getting out of hand and killing Ben and his wife Lydia as justice for his fiancée Fiona's death. But, despite being unmasked as a xenophobic murderer, Ben Lockwood and his alter ego only gained more fans who think aliens are here to steal their jobs. And one of those fans is his wife Lydia, who, instead of feeling frightened of her husband and who he's become, instead feels empowered to be the violently racist white lady she was always meant to be. Meanwhile, Colonel Haley and Alex learned that the President of the United States values public opinion much more than he values public lives. So, at the end of the day, even though Kara and Nia saved Lydia's life and brought Ben to justice, the President still commands Supergirl to turn in her DEO badge unless she's willing to reveal her secret identity to the world. Obviously, she is not. So she flies off, saying that the DEO should not start a war with her, because they will lose. Finally, when we last delved into Lena, she was still conducting human experiments to try to make them as powerful as aliens, while James was realizing that maybe he judged her too harshly, since it turns out that racists do kind of suck. And that's what he missed on Supergirl. So, moving on to what we know about the near future of Supergirl, we've got 2.5 episode descriptions for you. So, 410 is Suspicious Minds. Colonel Haley is determined to find out Supergirl's identity. Colonel Haley is upset after Supergirl responds to a distress call from a Navy ship that turned out to be a deadly alien attack. Colonel Haley reclaims the site as DEO territory and demands that Supergirl step aside. After Supergirl refuses to be told what to do, Haley refocuses her energy on finding out Supergirl's true identity and begins to interrogate all DEO agents, including Alex. Meanwhile, Brainy tries to persuade Nia to embrace her superpowers, but she misinterprets his motives. Rachel Talalay directed the episode, and it was written by Maria Magendi and Gabriel Yanes. So it sounds like 410 is going to be like the Colonel Haley hour. Plus, the big debate over Brainy and Nia will finally be put to rest for 3.5 seconds before it restarts. All right, 411, Blood Memory. Kate Burton guest stars. Nia and Kara visit Nia's hometown. Kara joins Nia on a trip to Nia's hometown to visit her family during the town's annual harvest festival. While home, Nia's mother encourages her daughter to embrace her destiny. Meanwhile, Alex deals with a street drug that is turning people violent and giving them temporary superpowers. Shannon Coley directed the episode written by Jessica Queller and Dana Horden. Woo! We've got a couple other casting news and whatnot. So we've got Jonathan Bennett, who looks sexy with his hair pushed back. Never forget, because he will never live it down. Was cast as Quentin.
Any note wide... for September 3rd.
Exactly. Notes for September 3rd. A wide-eyed government attaché who is grateful when Supergirl saves his life. However, when he shows his true colors by attending an anti-alien rally, Supergirl aims to prove to Quentin that not all aliens are bad. He appears in episode 14. We've also got Leonardo Nam, who is cast as Rampotatic, otherwise known as The Hat. He's a member of the Elite, an old pal of Magister's. He has charm, he's quick with his wits, and he has a major love of alcohol and violence. He's the second associate of Magister to appear, because Jessica Mraz has also been brought on to play Menagerie. So obviously, the Elite is coming.
I feel like that whole episode is going to be hashtag not all aliens.
Yes.
like, file this under another thing, you know, Eric Carrasco, like, and another thing, Eric Carrasco, let me tell you this. But I don't see why, like, it's bothering me that the onus is constantly on Kara and her friends to prove that she and aliens in general are worthy to people that hate them. Like, I don't see why it has to be, like, why I have to prove it. It just screams to me, like, I'll never be one of those Negroes, .mp4, because, like, in a way, it's like, of course there are good and bad aliens, just like there are good and bad people. So, you know, it's like, for black people, always having to be like, oh, it's like respectability politics. Like, I'm a good black person. I don't do drugs. I don't do this. I don't live da-da-da-da. And it's like, why do I have to continue to prove that I'm worthy to you? Like, the aliens and Supergirl universe have been there for forever. You know, they didn't just show up one day and things started changing. They've been there for years. And the only thing that's changed is that people, humans now, knowing that the person that they had been friends with for the past 20-something years is actually an alien. That's the only thing that changed. They've been the same person, the same alien, the same human being, alien, species, whatever, that you've been talking to for the past couple of years. So now why all of a sudden is it changed? Like, why do I need to jump through hoops to prove that I'm a quote-unquote good one? There are bad people in the world. They don't have to prove that they're bad humans. So, like, you know, how about you prove to me that you're not a piece of shit, perhaps, you know? Like, why does it always have to be on aliens? Like, why can't there be, like, you know, someone that is, they think the human is doing some bad shit, and he has to be like, no, I'm one of the good guys. You know, why does it always have to be, like, the other way around? Like, I don't like that, and I guess that's another one of the things that the unintentional bias is kind of coming out, because it's still being written from the perspective that aliens have to prove themselves to humans that they're okay for humans to be like, oh, I guess y'all are okay. Instead of, like, why don't humans prove that not all humans are pieces of shit? So, whatever. Anyway.
I'm right there with you
yes.
on that.
Yes.
So, does anyone have any predictions they would like to point out to Supergirl?
Regarding Brainy and Nia, this could go either way, but they might not end up dating, at least not for a while, because Nia is going to feel embarrassed that she misinterpreted Brainy's intentions. However, he could come around to the human idea of dating in a few episodes down the line, so we'll see. Right now, I just feel like they're sitting on the fence and they could just flip-flop either way. Aaron Samuels will be persuaded by Kara, and he'll either join her, or it'll just leave Kara feeling satisfied that she can change some people's minds, so maybe she can change all people's minds.
I'm holding my opinions on the whole Rainy Nia situation until I actually see the episode. To me, it just feels like they're sitting on the fence, and I feel defensive because I know like a lot of people are like, no, this is not what's going to happen, da 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 da. And you know, it's Rainy Nia is so obvious, and like one and all was getting like on my nerves. Who's like, no, they're not promoting, you know, Kara Dox in the CW network and all this kind of stuff. So I feel like it's being set up one way, but I will wait until the episode actually airs to see if I am right, and then I can just be that upper well gif, or you know, it's actually leading somewhere with Brainy and Nia, but I don't think they are on the fence as much as other people do. So I'll just leave it at that.
And I'm on the other side of the fence.
What is the other side of the fence?
Manny's on the fence.
Well, I'm not on the fence. I think the writers could be on the fence. I feel like the narrative has, like...
You're on the fence, though.
Maybe the narrative is on the fence. I think the narrative is on one side of the fence.
And I think the narrative is on the other side.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, if I was imagining this episode, it would be... Brainy comes in with the intention to guide Nia more with her powers. Nia misinterprets it, thinks it's a date. Then she's really embarrassed, like Mei said. And realizes that Brainy doesn't like her. But then Brainy has to be like, oh, wait a second. Am I acting this way because I do like her? Did I say, hey, girl, because I thought that was the normal thing that you say to girls? What kind of lover? Or did I say, hey, girl, because I was like, I want that girl? So then I think that we will have confirmation one way or the other of what Brainy feels.
Yeah,
It's just that I think he will realize he likes Nia, and you think he will realize he does not. And that is where we are.
Yes.
And we will soon know where they are. And then one of us will use an Oprah gif. So...
I will, like, if you use an Oprah gif, then I will not be offended, but I just want to, like, the way that it's very, you know, this is a tight race for me, so...
Yeah, I mean, if it turns out to be Brainy and Kara, then great, because that's comic
book. Or even if it, like, not, like, doesn't have to come, like, right after this thing. Like, it doesn't have to develop right after, but I think,
End up being something they develop, if that ends up being where they go, then that's great, because Kara deserves a romance, and because Brainy deserves all the screen time. So I'm fine with that.
At the very least, I think that I am half right, and that the way that it's been written up to now has been all... Nia one-sided, and we don't really know what Brainy feels, and so that's kind of why I am on the outskirts of this whole thing, because it's not been clear what Brainy feels, and I feel like in this episode coming up, we'll at least one way or another know what Brainy feels. So there.
Moving on to Arrow. Last year on Arrow, the new Green Arrow was revealed to be none other than Oliver's other half-sister, Emiko Queen. She's Robert's daughter, and she thinks she's kind of similar to Oliver, which totally makes sense. Meanwhile, Oliver's thanks for saving the city 300 times ceremony was interrupted by another Green Arrow impersonator who wasn't Emiko, even though Renee was the only one who firmly believed that. Thanks to Oliver's team-up with Renee, though, he discovers his ex-friend Max Fuller was behind the murders. And in order to allow him to continue pursuing his vigilante justice, Dinah used her position as the SCPD to make Green Arrow an official liaison to the cops. So while he's happily ensconced in legal vigilanteism, Oliver is less than happy with Felicity's new gun-toting self-defense ways. They had a nasty face-off about whether or not you could love someone who had changed until Oliver literally swapped lives with Barry and realized through the power of West Allen's love that he should shut up and be grateful to have Felicity at all. Over in the future craptastic Star City, William, Dinah, and Zoe met Black Star / Maya and learned that she and Felicity were working on a bomb for Star City together. And that was before the latter supposedly died. But in order to stop Maya from continuing with that bomb, which I think apparently Felicity did not want to go off in the end, the gang has to head to the Glades and get Renee's help. And that's what you missed on Arrow. So, what we know is we have two episode descriptions again, and then new information that Jessica uncovered about episode 12. And if you watch Arrow, you probably already knew it.
Yeah.
Yes, it sounds great. All right. 7:10. My name is Emma Go Queen. Oliver returns to his regular life in Star City. He's ready to get back to work with the SCPD and to focus on his marriage with Felicity. However, when Dinah tasks Oliver with tracking the new Green Arrow, things take a surprising turn. Meanwhile, Diggle and Lila must answer to Argus about Diaz. Andy Armaganian directed the episode, written by Benjamin Robb and Derek A. Hughes. We miss you guys. 7:11, Past Sins. David Ramsey directs his first episode of Arrow. The past comes back to haunt both Oliver and Laurel. Curtis is upset when he discovers that Diggle and Lila have restarted the Ghost Initiative with Diaz, China White, Kane Wolfman, and Carrie Cutter. David Ramsey directed the episode written by Ona Lee Hunter Hughes and Tonya Kong. And then we've got 7:12, Emerald Archer. Would you like to tell us about it, Jessica?
Yes, I would. So this is kind of cool, actually. And it's called 7:12's Emerald Archer, and it will showcase a documentary that is entitled The Hood and the Rise of Vigilanteism, and stars Oliver Queen, Felicity Smoke, and the rest of Team Arrow. Oliver Queen, Felicity Smoke, and friends. The official synopsis is for TV Line is that as a camera crew follows Oliver and team around to talk about their past vigilantes and what the Green Arrow means to Star City, Oliver must also deal with William's return from boarding school as well as a new threat to the city. So we get William back, finally, in the present, in 7:12. This episode will feature documentary footage captured by a behind-the-scenes crew and interviews from those who have worked alongside the Green Arrow, and it will all be narrated by Kelsey Grammer. And so this is like The Office, but Arrow style. Like, I would like for them to do like a parody of like The Office intro, just because I think that'd be hilarious. But I'm actually like really, really interested in this episode. What do you guys think?
When I saw that William's returning from boarding school, I legit thought it was taking place a few years from now, and it was like his last trip to Star City before everything went to shit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to break, but I'm going to go back. I think this is a really interesting setup, and I don't think Arrow's done anything like this before, so I'm really interested to see what's going to happen, because the documentary footage is always really interesting, and with these characters, like, you never know. Like, we're gonna look at them. Like, I always love when it's from a third person perspective, from the characters you've been with for years, but it's like people are looking at it differently.
Like show within a show.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing first off what Kelsey Grammer's narrations will be, but also how they're going to incorporate it into the episode and how if it's going to clash with the tone of Arrow or if they're going to make it fit. We'll see.
And it's the 150th episode, so it's kind of like a milestone episode. And I think what I'll be interested in seeing is like how the characters react to knowing that they're on camera. So like there's always in documentary footage, some characters are just like, I don't want to talk to you. And they're like very short. And there's other ones that like to like ham it up for like the cameras, which I'm thinking is going to be like Curtis.
Right. Yeah, but, who's going to be the one that looks into the camera like you're on The Office every single time?
Yeah, that's great.
They're important. anyway.
And one other thing that we just learned came out recently, and it was in an interview with Bev Schwartz. They are also going, I don't think they said what title it was going to be or what number, but they are doing a Birds of Prey inspired episode Laurel is going to be leading. And it's up in the air as to who is going to join her. But, I mean, like, there's only so many female characters in Arrow that could do it and make up that. So that's, like, really exciting. So, like, and Beth said that we're going to get a lot more. I think there's also an Earth 2-inspired backstory for Laurel episode coming up as well. So there's a lot of things for Laurel that's happening. And, like, who knew that firing a sexist showrunner And adding more diversity to your writer's room would lead to more creativity. Yay! And that seems what they're doing. And so we'll see how that all plays out. So
what else we got? Do we have any predictions? Like, for example, we're going to learn who Emiko's mom is in the mid-season premiere. So any guesses on who that might be? Because it's probably not Shadow.
I still think it's Talia.
Mm. You think it's Talia?
I think she's baby mama candidate number one on my list.
All right. Any other predictions?
I don't know that there is anyone else that comes to mind immediately.
I mean, it's got to be someone that could participate in training for her.
And also someone we should already know, as, you know, that we've met.
Yeah, the only other one I would say is, like, China White. Like, I have no idea.
Right. Yeah. And she's supposed to, we know she's coming back in, 7-Eleven?
Part of the new Suicide Squad. Suicide Squad 2.0, which unfortunately Diaz is a part of, but anyway, that's all right. But yeah, so those are the only two I've got. So, shall we move on to Legends?
Do we want to say think that Maya is related to William or not? Is there anything that's changed to make us think that she would be as opposed to not be?
Based on her premiere episode, I wouldn't think she was. It just sounded like they were just doing a deal, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Same. And there's been no spoilers hinting at any of that either.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of the fandom was thinking that if it were to happen, it would happen in David Ramsey's episode, which is 7-Eleven. But just like from the description, that it's Laurel and Oliver focus, like, separately, obviously, but the focus is on them and their past. It doesn't really seem like there is room for Maya in the future being his daughter kind of story, but I don't know.
It could be a surprise, but at the very least, I think that they would mention in the description that something's happening in the future, the way that they did for 7-10. All right, then. We will not have predictions, really, for Legends, because we already gave predictions for the mid-season finale, and the show doesn't come back until April. But, just in case you forgot what's happening on Legends, last year, Constantine and Charlie tried to rewrite all of history in order to save Constantine's love for Des and Charlie's love of shapeshifting powers. But thanks to the sanity and wisdom of Zari Cat, and their own consciences, they managed to put things back to rights with a magical kiss between Constantine and Des. After a few time-traveling, reality-altering misfires, of course. Charlie apologized to Zari, Ava likes Mick's book, and all is well with the world. Until Hank learns that Mona's friend, the Kobe, has escaped, and he reports that news to Desmond, or a demon with glowing red eyes that looks like Desmond because he's actually Neron in Desmond's body. Oh, noes! So that's what you missed on Legends. And the only things I know at this moment are the episode titles. So in case y'all don't know, Lucha de Puestas airs on April 1st. Obviously, they're going to do some Mexican wrestling. And the rest of the episodes are The Getaway, Seance and Sensibility.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, I know. I love that one. The Eggplant, The Witch and the Wardrobe, Egg MacGuffin, Nick Stuck, Terms of Service, and Hey World. So these episode titles are excellent.
They are amazing. I love them so much.
I'm definitely looking forward to what they have in store for us, but I can't currently tell you what's going on other than in Seance and Sensibility. Clearly someone will speak to the dead. That's all I got.
Oh, that probably be a Nora. Oh, it could be a Dark Adam episode.
Oh, okay. I'm excited then. Oh, there you go. That's a prediction for you. Yes. Dark Adam will kiss by the end of the season. Anyone else got predictions based on those episode titles?
Favorite ones might be Sam's Insensibility, The Eggplant, The Witch in the Wardrobe, and Nip Stuck.
Yes.
Oh, pause, because this is the thing. Hold on.
Okay. So, shall we move on to Black Lightning?
Yes, ma'am.
We shall.
All right. Last but certainly not least. Last year on Black Lightning, the Pierce family was worried sick about Jennifer in the wake of her disappearance and their failed pursuit of her. Lynn, so distraught that she couldn't even take her husband's calls, stopped by Khalil's mom's house to comfort her and extract information about Khalil's dad. Said father informed Lynn about Khalil's secret apartment, but that wasn't much help because the audience knows that he and Jennifer are elsewhere. Meanwhile, Jefferson and Anissa kept one step behind Jennifer and Khalil, even appearing at the hospital minutes after Jennifer left it. It's a good thing that Jennifer was able to handle herself for a while, even uncovering Cutter's poison blades, with some help from Perenna's mind palace, and then torturing Cutter into providing the antidote for Khalil's poisoning. With that said and done, she decided to stick with her man, despite him trying to persuade her to return to her family. Thankfully, Tobias Whale is too busy with his new recruit Todd to really worry about what Jennifer and her family are up to. After Todd's grant was denied in favor of some white kids, Tobias gave him a cool $100 million and made him part of a slowly diminishing squad. And finally, some dude with teleporting powers killed a bar full of people and then set out for Freeland. A message missed on Black Lightning. Now here is what we know, with two super long episode titles and their descriptions that are almost as long as their titles. 210, The Book of Rebellion. Chapter 3, Angelitos Negros. Plans. Still on the run, Jennifer and Khalil succumb to their feelings for one another and begin planning their future together.
Kill me. Kill me now. What? Take me away.
Meanwhile, Jefferson approaches Henderson with a favor. Benny Mazinga Stewart directed the episode written by Jan Nash and J. Allen Brown. 211, The Book of Secrets. Chapter 1. Prodigal son. Frustration. Jefferson suspects that Tobias is behind a recent malicious attack. He brings this news to Henderson, but doesn't get the answer he was looking for. Meanwhile, Lynn is confronted by her past. Rob Hardy directed the episode written by Pat Charles. And then, of course, because of the promotional materials, we know that Jennifer will be in her lightning suit soon. So that's exciting. Anyone have thoughts on this?
Just, like, I'm gonna be so glad when we get out of the Book of Rebellion.
Yes.
I can't stand it.
It's coming.
It's the end is near. Whatever. So it'll be interesting to see what new chapter we start in the Book of Secrets.
I think that we can certainly guess that Jennifer will be enveloped back in her family. You know,
yeah, they will welcome her back.
Yes. The question is kind of just whether Khalil will be coming back with her or he's off to do something else.
Yeah. Or he's dead.
Or he's dead.
My predictions, like, seeing as Chantal picked up a play over the winter break, and it's in, like, the middle of the back half of the filming, and we haven't really seen much of her saying that she's on set or that she's filming, like, she didn't seem to film very much. But anyways, I'm going to guess that once again, Thunder Grace, and Grace in general, was just dropped for the rest of the season, and that we may never get back to what the fuck's going on with her, at least this season. And it's kind of funny because Chantal actually retweeted our Love Boat, Naughty or Nice series when we were airing out a lot of our frustration over the Black Lightning ships. And at first I thought that maybe it was just like an auto-retweet because I think like May hashtag Ben and Grace in the tweet. And I was like, oh my God, did she actually listen to it? But like if it is true that we don't see Grace or her storylines the rest of the season, I might have to, like, maybe she did it on purpose, I don't know. But it's just kind of, it's frustrating because I feel like that's something that we should get back to. And since it is Book of Secrets, maybe we will, I don't know, maybe that'll prove me wrong, but it's not feeling like we will, and I really don't think that we'll get into it until we actually hit Markovia and the actual Outsiders. So I guess my other prediction is that, like, this guy, the teleporting guy at the end of the finale, is also somehow connected to an outsider. Like, he's an outsider character, maybe, that we don't know yet. Because we had Markovia mention the country, and I think they mentioned, like, the prince, but they didn't mention Brienne by name. So we have that. We have Looker. We have Dr. Jace. We have Grace and Anissa. And I'm guessing whoever this teleportation guy is, there is a, maybe Todd that Tobias recruited is also somehow connected to the Outsiders. I don't know. And maybe Outsiders is the theme of season 3. And then we'll get tons of Grace. but I don't really, as of now, don't see it happening in season two.
Yeah. Well, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed it happens.
What I would really like to see is, like, they should just make her a series regular so that they can just be more consistent. So they don't have to, like, wonder, like, oh, when should we call her? Because she's not going to sit there and wait around either, you know? So.
Right.
But I have no predictions other than I'm really, really looking forward to the end of Jennifer and Khalil's story because I have to sit through another They're Still on the Run episode, which is probably going to frustrate me.
Yes. It's so sad. It's so sad.
Do we predict that he survives the episode?
That's a great question.
That's really hard. Like, I feel like because he's already been in danger so much and survived all of them, like, it would be, like, kind of random to kill him now. But on the other hand, you know, being a series regular for this season doesn't mean he has to be a series regular past this season. And it would certainly give Jennifer an incentive to, like, level up and fight back against Tobias or whatever.
So reverse especially if the
family... Yeah. Especially if her family was, like, trying to help and then, like, Tobias is somehow behind him dying, I guess.
But I also don't want her being a superhero to be so reliant on him dying either.
Yeah.
But, like, the whole rest of her superhero journey has been reliant on him, so why should...
Yeah, that's true.
It's beauty different.
Yeah, why can't Sad he times. Die to further her story?
That's all for me.
Okay. Good times. All right.
Well, I think that's for us too.
Yeah. That's all we've got. That's all we've got.
We're not covering height because the only thing that we know. Yeah. Oh, that is one thing that is news, I guess, is that they start filming in March.
Toronto. Season 2. Yeah.
Toronto. Yeah. Yes. And that's all we know.
That's news.
That's it.
And that's what you missed on Titans. All right. Thank you for hanging out with us. Remember that you can always give us our feedback. Or your feedback to us on, but really it belongs to us. Give it to us on DCTV Gumption on Twitter, ladieswgumption@gmail.com via email or without the gmail.com via Tumblr. So come back next week for a full slate of DCTV shows when we'll be discussing all the mid season premieres plus The Flash.
Yay! Bye.
Bye.